You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I rise to oppose this resolution that prioritizes tax cuts for billionaires over the well-being of hardworking American families and the livelihoods of our nation's farmers.
Angie Craig from Minnesota is the ranking member of the House Ag Committee.
The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is our nation's most effective anti-poverty tool and a key part of the Farm Bill, which Republicans want to cut by $230 billion. This would cause millions of hardworking Americans to suffer, including some of the most vulnerable in our communities, children, seniors, and the disabled. Decimating SNAP in this way would break up the coalition that is critical to passing a bipartisan farm bill and hurts the entire food supply chain when times are tough in farm country and in many communities, especially rural communities across this country. Right now, as people across our nation are struggling with the high cost of groceries, SNAP helps American families keep food on the table. And let's be clear about what we're talking about. $6 a day for people in need. $6 to those who qualify. SNAP reduces childhood poverty, improves health outcomes, and generates hundreds of thousands of jobs throughout the food supply chain. Because when you spend a dollar on food, you aren't just paying for the food in your cart. You're helping to pay for the salary of the grocery store clerk who stocked the shelves, the trucker who delivered the food to the store, the manufacturer who produced the packaging, and the farmer who grew it. The future of a bipartisan farm bill, which our farmers desperately need, is in Republican hands today. If you cut SNAP to pay for tax cuts or your wealthy donors, it's on you. I urge my colleagues to vote no.
Chairman of the committee, G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania.
This budget resolution begins the process of delivering on President Trump's agenda. And that agenda is clear. It's securing the border. It's unleashing economic growth. It's providing efficiency and accountability in government. It's reining in reckless spending that spurred record inflation. My colleagues on the other side of the aisle continue to talk about the harmful provisions within this resolution. In reality, this is the beginning of the process. It's the beginning of a course correction that is desperately needed following 4 years of policy that placed America in a position of excess and decline. Speaking of excess, since President Trump's first term, increased enrollment and exploitation of the 2018 Farm Bill by the Biden administration ballooned the annual spending on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program by 66% at a total cost of $256 million, leaving workers on the sidelines while small businesses paying record wages struggle to find help. This egregious executive overreach not only violated the Congressional Review Act, but likely reduced the fraction of people participating in the workforce and contributed to inflation. Mr. Speaker, we must meet the vital supplemental food needs of Americans that Congress committed to fulfill through SNAP, and we will. We cannot allow excess or lack of accountability within the bureaucracy, though, to compromise fulfilling that obligation. Thoughtful policies that recognize the value of work, hold states accountable, promote program integrity, and in the long run, protect the safety net for those Americans who truly need it should be our priority. At the same time, we must use this process to advance the needs of the farm economy. We cannot leave our most ardent supporters in rural America without new resources and empty-handed for a third year. House Republicans have a mandate to restore America's faith in government, and we will protect hardworking taxpayers during the largest tax increase in American history, and will provide for the neediest among us while simultaneously delivering a foundation for economic growth and prosperity. Mr. Speaker, let us ensure America is once again the land of opportunity and thriving communities.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Seems as though with a little bit of an increase in the price of milk and a great increase in the demand for dairy heifers, those prices have jumped up in the last few months.
Dr. Mike Brook is a Kansas State dairy specialist on how many dairy heifers are needed.
You know, there have been reports here early in 2025 of replacement heifers costing between $3,000 and $4,000 a piece. Seems pretty high, and when you consider the prices for cull cows, often between $2,000 and $2,500 a piece for larger cows, it's understandable that heifers might be worth that much. We've also had some reports of wet cows selling for close to $3,000 per head. One of the things that's pushing this is our utilization of beef semen on some of our dairy animals to create the beef by dairy crosses that were seen in the feed yards. With today's value of those animals, and again, there's been some extreme prices reported there as well, upwards to $1,000 per animal for a calf that's only a few days old. Many of these selling between $600 and $700 currently. So that's putting a pressure on the dairy farmers to keep producing these crossbred calves, which takes away from our heifer supply. So one of the things I want to encourage our dairy farmers is to carefully consider how many heifers they actually need to produce every year to have enough replacements for their herd. And one of the things that is often left out in this discussion is what we call the heifer completion rate. In other words, every heifer that is bred on your farm is not going to make it into your lactating cow herd. First one that takes away from that potential supply is just simply abortions, whether that be early on or at any time during the pregnancy. And, you know, as we look at that, it could be 2 to 3% of our breedings might result in an abortion at some point in stage. Calf death losses. Not every calf born on your farm is going to survive through the first couple of days of life. And oftentimes it could be as high as 2 to 5% on a given dairy. We also are going to lose some of those heifer calves during the initial growing phases as they go to the weaning area. And that could be about 2%. Breeding failures also occur. Not every heifer that is born will actually conceive, and oftentimes we might see 1 to 2% of the animals that do not breed in the window we would like them to breed in. Also, there can be some additional culls due to injury or other things, disposition, whatever might be, and that might be another 1%. So you add all that up, and that could be anywhere from 8 to 13%. Of your heifers that you had actually planned breeding for. Now, this would be kind of conservative. As we look at herds across the United States, it's not unusual to find herds that actually have a heifer completion rate of 80% and sometimes even less than that. So, how large does your heifer herd need to be? Well, you got to take into consideration the losses that are going to occur in that two-year period. So, making sure that you have enough extra heifers born and planned for in your breeding program is important. That could be increasing that expectation by 20% to make sure you can cover this, or take a look at the information from your own herd, determine how you actually are doing. Maybe you can get by with 15% extra heifers planned for to cover these losses.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Today, if nothing happens, it's not nothing that happens.
House Majority Leader from Louisiana, Steve Scalise.
You've got options, Madam Chair. You can vote yes to pass this resolution and get this process of budget reconciliation started, or you can vote no, like all of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle brag they're going to do. So if that's the case, Madam Chair, and maybe I can persuade a few, because maybe they don't know this, because clearly they haven't read the bill. You hear them talking about Medicaid over and over and over again. Cuts to Medicaid, cuts to Medicaid. Clearly they haven't read the bill, because if you read the bill, the word Medicaid is mentioned a total of zero times in the bill. Zero. But that's all they want to talk about. If you read the bill, you would talk about what this does to engage 11 different committees in this Congress, 11 committees, to start a process called budget reconciliation, where they will go into open hearings on C-SPAN. Everybody in America can watch the deliberations, where there will be a discussion about how to get this country back on track, which the people of this nation are hungering for. Not people yelling and screaming and telling lies and trying to scare people with false information. We are here to talk facts. And the facts are a no vote imposes $4.5 trillion in taxes that primarily hit middle and low income families, not the millionaires and billionaires that they seem to want to demonize.
Still, New York Democrat Adriano Espaillat.
Over 100,000 of them are Medicare recipients. So over 600,000 of the 780,000 constituents that I represent receive either Medicaid or Medicare. In addition to that, there are 263,000 households that receive food stamp. This bill will put their life and health in danger, Madam Speaker. This is about life and death. As the Republican majority proposes to cut Medicaid across this country, to give a massive $4.5 trillion, with a capital T, trillion dollar cut in taxes to the very rich. And who would that go to? 50% of that will go to the shareholders. 44% of that tax cut would go to high-end executives. The fat cat executives are going to get this money, and working class and even middle class people are going to get stiff with the cuts. And this is about life and death.
David Schweikert is a Republican from Arizona.
Madam Chair, let me have just a couple moments of joy here. A reconciliation budget that only touches individuals and pass-through businesses, so there are no shareholders who are getting, that's actually already locked in. That's one of the reasons we're doing this, is because you want to see distortions in the economy, have a world where small businesses, pass-throughs, employee-owned, their taxes shoot up. But the C corporations are down here. What distortion did you just create in the world? I'm a C corporation. I'm buying everyone else. You want to see the big get bigger? It's one of the reasons you have to do this. But also, I beg my brothers and sisters, have a different view, but actually just try to get the most basic facts correct here.
Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Despite all the promises on the campaign trail, House Republicans have chosen to do three things with their majority: raise the cost of putting food on the table, raise the cost of getting health care, and use that money, deserving taxpayers' money, to cut billionaires' taxes.
Catherine Clark is a Democrat from Connecticut.
And let's look at the scale of what they're sacrificing. Funding that feeds 15 million children. A program that pays for half of all the births in America. A service that keeps nursing homes and health centers' doors open. All to cut Elon's taxes. If that sounds outrageous to you, Madam Chair, and I sure hope it does, you are not alone. Let's be clear about the kind of money we're talking about. You know what it costs to keep a kid on Medicaid? $10 a day. How about keeping that child fed with SNAP benefits? $6 a day. What do Republicans want to give away to the already rich? $6 million per billionaire. Think about that. For a billionaire, $6 million is not even a rounding error. For a hungry child, it's enough to eat every single day for 34 lifetimes. Inflicting hunger on children to give billionaires money they don't need and won't even notice? Will they vote to keep that mom and her daughter fed? Or will they keep padding the pockets of those who will not even notice? The American people can forgive a lot, but they will not forgive this betrayal.
David Schweikert's a Republican from Arizona.
This, I think, is somewhat of a unique opportunity for those of us from the Joint Economic Committee. We actually take math seriously. We don't always see things alike, but the fact of the matter is the Joint Economic Committee, I think, started in 1956, has this remarkable history of some of the world's greatest economists coming and speaking before it and walking us through it. And that's why this moment, we're going to try to do something that's special. Instead of just sort of sharing feelings, I'm going to ask us to share math. And within that, we're going to walk through what's actually in the budget resolution. This is a reconciliation budget. It's not a regular budget. This is a budget that opens up the ability, because the insanity we go through of moving something to the Senate and it's 60 votes. So the 1974 Budget Control Act, this is the dance we go through. The other thing I'm going to try to walk through is where the actual math lays in the box that's been given to us by the Budget Committee. And then the part I'm going to do the Schweikert little bit of hope is this the moment? Is this the moment of policy that actually forces us, both the left and the right, that if there's cuts, modernization, changes, updates in methodology, how we deliver services, is this the stressor that makes us do something that's hard, but also do something that's truthful? I'm also going to try repeatedly to make the point, Mr. Chairman, and show why are we primarily doing this? We have a handful, actually a bunch of provisions of the 2017 tax reform that begin to expire. Most of those provisions actually have the benefit of small businesses and the working class.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The January cattle on feed report showed pretty much as expected, no big surprises.
Dr. Darrell Peel, Oklahoma State livestock economist.
Placements in the month of January were 2% above a year ago. Marketings were about 1% above a year ago. And the February 1 on feed total was about 1% below a year ago. That's not vastly different than what we saw in January and really over the last two or three months. You know, I think we're still going to move forward here at some point in time and see more pressure to pull those inventories down. But again, as we just mentioned, the markets have been, very attractive to pull more cattle in and change the timing a little bit, weather disruptions notwithstanding. And so we've seen, continued to see short-term supplies that more than meet the placement needs to hold us up here pretty close to year-ago levels at this point.
Are there challenges for feeders?
And I should mention that the February report, USDA's or NASA's report also contains a summary of all the things that happened last year, kind of confirming the numbers. But the one other thing that's in here is the annual estimate of the overall feedlot capacity. It's once a year they give us this number, and it was up just slightly. We've been wavering between a capacity number of 17.1 to 17.2 million head for the last several years, and it went up from 17.1 to 17.2 for January 1 of 25. And we know that there's a couple of new feedlot operations that have been under construction and so on. So we continue to maintain a large feedlot inventory at the same time that overall cattle numbers are down, and that therein lies part of the challenge going forward for feedlots.
So how are feedlots remaining viable?
You know, it's interesting. If you look over the last several years, we've seen a pretty pronounced trend where on January 1, the cattle on feed inventory will be a bigger percentage of the total cattle inventory. So cattle are, more cattle are in feedlots. And if you look at, of course, we talked a lot about in the past months about extra days on feed, heavier carcass weights. These cattle are spending more time in feedlots. And so we're putting a bigger percentage of the weight of cattle on in the feedlot. And that's one of the ways that we've maintained these larger feedlot inventories, even though the overall number of cattle in the country is declining. So we're kind of shifting to a more feedlot-oriented model in some sense in the industry. We're using cattle a little more intensively. And so that's a reflection of the way things have evolved. And that's not just a recent thing. That's over several years.
And could there still be incentives for new calves?
One of the things that came out of the cattle inventory report was a bigger calving percentage than we've seen in about 20 years. And we think that's due to the fact that obviously calves are worth a lot. Prices are high. Producers have an incentive to try to have more calves to sell. And the interesting thing now in the world we're in today is that's true not only on the beef side, but also on the dairy side with these crossbred calves. And I say all that to say that, we still got these markets. So we're very bullish on them. Prices are high. So cattle producers have an incentive to try to maximize the number of calves they have for sale. Winter weather can be a challenge as we're getting into calving season now. But, producers probably will put a little extra effort into trying to, make sure they get those calves, that they keep them alive and keep them healthy in order to take advantage of the current market that we have.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This budget is disastrous for the American economy.
Don Beyer, a Democrat from Virginia, on the budget resolution debate.
All of this for billionaires and corporations to get tax cuts they do not need and that our country cannot afford. I'm pleased to do this with my friend, Chairman Swikert. I also believe in math, and I rarely brag, but I'm good at math. Americans have been clear. They want lower prices and an economy that works for them. Yet instead of focusing on making life easier for American families, at every turn, this administration, our Republican colleagues, have engaged in a scorched-earth policy, a policy that creates chaos across the country as the richest person on the planet eliminates services that our nation depends upon. My friend from South Carolina earlier said the policies would bankrupt our country. What's he mean? Health care for our families? Food for the working poor who overwhelmingly live in Republican districts? Sure, get rid of any identified bloat, as every president does. But this is a budget about billionaires, not about the every American women, men, and children we represent. Yes, I want to move towards a much smaller budget deficit. I listen to David Swikert every closing afternoon during his special order hours. I hate the higher interest costs. But who pays? Our families or the 1,000 billionaires? That small percentage, 1% or less, of American population that has way more wealth than they could ever spend in lifetimes to come. You know, this budget depends on, my Republicans have long sung from the altar of fiscal responsibility, yet the plan they put in front of us today is a fiscal sacrilege. It depends on fantasy math. It ignores that their deficit-busting tax breaks will add at least $4.6 trillion on our nation's credit card, adding even more interest that our families must pay. And this interest has real costs. It slows economic growth. It depresses the standard of living. It leads to higher inflation and higher interest rates, and it makes it even harder for families already faced with high prices and borrowing costs to make ends meet. Wasteful, woke, and weaponized policies, my friend from Texas said, that's a very small percentage of the federal budget. You're going to never achieve what's in this budget resolution on wasteful, woke, and weaponized policies. So what is this Republican plan? How do they address? They double down on the policies that will widen the growing wealth gap this nation by giving billionaires trillions in handouts of providing pennies to the middle class. According to the Treasury Department, the top 1% of Americans, those making over $750,000 a year, can expect to get an annual tax cut of over $32,000. Working families will see a tiny fraction of that. Of course, the other main beneficiaries will be the wealthiest executives of the wealthiest corporations at a time when corporate profits are at an all-time high. Americans who rely on government services will be told they need to make sacrifices to pad those profit margins even further. How does that make any sense? To pay for these tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy, the Republican budget proposes to cut programs Americans rely on to afford health care and to put food on the table. Almost 100 million Americans, including seniors, children, families, and those from every corner of this country, depend on Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act to afford medical care. Yet this budget would slash almost $900 billion from these critical programs, ripping away life-saving coverage and raising health care costs for those who rely on them. And at a time when prices at the grocery stores continue to climb, this budget would make it even harder for the 40 million Americans who rely on SNAP to put food on the table. The budget we are considering today will nothing to support the economic growth of this nation. It will benefit the wealthiest at the expense of those who make this country work.
It's Agriculture Today.